yourself actually when you were already influenced?
I didn't discover it myself. I didn't discover it that other people said this was the case.
Not as a young teacher?
No. Nobody ever. I never felt that somebody sort of followed my footsteps.
That you told me. But
I didn't feel it. Not only did I disapprove of it, but I didn't actually, so to speak, notice that somebody was returning my own stuff to me.
And nowadays, you don't regret this attitude?
No. I'm rather pleased to have some. When my friend Rawls said to me that my stuff on two concepts and partly his organizability had a very considerable influence in American...
So you like it?
I was terribly surprised, but rather gratified.
Yep.
Yes.
Please.
Yes. But astonished. Astonished. My idea has always appeared very obvious to me. And the fact that I've said it seems to me, surely, everyone must have thought it already. I'll tell you a little funny story. I said to McGee, to whom I expounded this in one of those interviews shared with me, I can't think, one of my ideas which I most attached to is the idea of the incompatibility of ultimate values. Inside people, inside groups, between civilizations everywhere. Surely, the idea that some values are not compatible with others is self-evident. Somebody must have thought of this before me. I know it's in Austin, but Austin got it from me. I know that. Because I'm aware of. I thought of that.
The idea of the incompatibility
of ultimate values, that equality and liberty or spontaneity and planning or anything you like, mercy and justice, anything you like.
They're incompatible, are they only incompatible or are they also conflicting or contradictory?
They can be both, but certainly incompatible. We can't have both. We have to choose. It doesn't mean you must be contradictory, because if they're not compatible, if you have one, you can't have the other. But surely it's self-evident. So McGee said, I'll ask Papa. So he asked Karl Popper, who said, yes, someone did have it before him. Who? I did, he said. But it's not in print, is all I can tell you. Well, it was later, but long after it, written my piece. Well, that is very typical. He's the most one of the vainest people I've ever met in the world.
I don't want to embark on every two topics, I'll ask some small ones. And it is connected partly with Washington, but it's a more of a general nature. Your attitude, I mean, when you look upon your, retrospectively, upon your reaction toward events, surely, we all experience events that we think that are of great importance, and then it proves to be a farce or a non-event. On the other hand, surely, sometimes we face very important events and we don't realize.
All right.
Let's say...
We can make mistakes, yes.
Yeah.
We don't make
you are bound to make mistakes.
Of course. We don't notice at the time.
Yes.
Later they turn out to be.
In both ways. Sometimes you...
And sometimes we pay. They turn out to be trivial.
I'll give you one example. In Algeria, the conference of the Palestinians now in Algeria.
Yes.
It might be...
A turning point.
A turning point, and it might not. And people there were feeling, at least many felt, that like in Basel. Can you think of events that you didn't realize their importance at the time?
I mean, yes, and vice versa.
And vice versa. I thought about it, I started thinking about it, let's say even during the Second World War.
Well, the Russian Revolution.
Yeah.
But I was too young, so you can't say. I thought
I
was aware that something big had happened. I didn't think historically.
Sure.
This is more important than this or this. In England, in my lifetime, Second World War, that was obviously a major event, so nobody doubts it.
But let's say the trials of Moscow.
No, I didn't pay great attention, no. And yet they were something.
Just because you were not a communist.
Oh, yes, of course. Crucial. But had I been a communist, it would not have been crucial. Because most communists thought they were perfectly justified. Only if I ceased later, when I ceased to be communist, I mean, Christopher Hill, believed every word. I never met a communist who was horrified by it at the time. I didn't know any communists, but I mean, I didn't know any left-wing persons who was outraged at the time. I mean, Dewey had a kind of trouble with a lot of Trotskyites, had a trial in Mexico with Trotsky about it. That's far away. I mean, I knew nobody in England who reacted. I mean, I knew they were no good, the trials. Of course I knew, even though I was at school. No, I wasn't at school. Certainly not, I was at Oxford.
No, you were at Oxford. You were already in...
I thought them. I knew them. I knew them were monsters. I knew them.
Now, let's say Hiroshima and Nagasaki. What do you remember?
Nothing. No effect. No.
Already in Moscow.
In London. I was in London. Now when was it? Was it August or August? During Potsdam. Because Truman told Stalin, or was it Churchill? He didn't react. Wait a moment.
But it was...
Look, the German war came to an end before.
Yes, the war
called VE. VE comes before. Now when is VE? VE is when? V is May? May, late May. All right. The election was in July. The bomb had not fallen then. The bomb had fallen during Potsdam.
But the elections also were during the Potsdam.
Oh, yes.
But after the Labour came to power? I don't remember.
I mean, if after Labour, then Dudley must have been consulted.
No, I think it was Churchill's time.
I would think so. But Truman approved of it.
Yes,
okay. That certainly.
So, but you don't remember...
think this is a terrible moment, turning point in history, which it was.
Or discussing his friends, so...
I wonder what I learned about it. Did I know anything about it before the concept of the atom bomb?
The concept of the atom bomb, possibly, but I don't believe.
Yes, I think I must have done. I think in Washington, in 1945, well, 46, of course, but... No, no, of course. Nor did I, it's not that. I'm just trying to think...
The concept, of course,
yes. The idea. I simply can't answer. But I have to say, it didn't change my life. I didn't feel the world had changed. Big weapon. Worse than the others. Just the others.
Now, did you follow the Nuremberg trials?
Yes, but not very attentively.
And you were part, you were in London?
I was in Nuremberg. When was Nuremberg? 46.
Started in 45.
No, it can't. 45 is too soon. Can't 45.
So early 46.
I was in Oxford. First in America. I think Nuremberg occurred in the summer of 46. They must have taken a year to collect the material.
Now, after all, Nuremberg trials, there were conceptual problems there. Herbert was already in Oxford.
Yes.
I mean, do you remember any discussion?
None. None. The only person who was violently against it was Daube.
On what
ground? Illegal. Unconstitutional. No such thing in international law. Simply, I mean, simply revenge. I mean, the victors do it, so to speak. No moral justification. He's a super German. Nobody is more German than Daube. I never liked him very much. You're not happy at Oxford. Not happy at All Souls, particularly. He was terribly disliked. Yes.
Oh, and other such events, let's say, I mean, the decision to evacuate India.
Nothing. I took it all my stride. Why not? India, of course, I mean, quite normal. I didn't react strongly. The only peace news, Labour victory. That was something.
That was in...
Yes. That was the summer I was in England.
That was
I hadn't voted because I was in America when the voting occurred, but the result was in July. That excited me. I was entirely in favour of it.
Let's say in the Israeli side, November the 29th, the resolution of the United
States. I was anti-conservative right through the war.
Pardon?
I was anti-conservative right through the war.
It now appears, by the way, that the Labour victory was less of a surprise let's say, Jock Colville in his diaries, writes in 43 or 4, after sailing from London to South Africa, I can't remember, and being in a boat with soldiers and sailors and so on, he predicts a Labour victory.
Why?
Because he saw the mood of the people, the soldiers.
Why were they in favor of Labour?
It doesn't go into details. But it's interesting. It's interesting. On the other hand, we all have the feeling that it was a shock.
To me, certainly. And to Stalin. and to Churchill, and to Eden.
Eliyahu Golomb comes back from London in 1944 and reports in Mapai that the atmosphere now is more optimistic than the labor might win.
So, what did you 1944? The disappointment in Israel about the labor government was unbelievable.
People can't realize.
Particularly the man here, what's his name?
Berlocker.
He couldn't swallow it at all. He couldn't have this absolute blow over the head.
You know, the better results of the elections. The non-news.
Triumph!
I was in a city, young boy, 16 years old. 17 years old, in Machane Avodah, in a kibbutz. And all the kibbutzim over
there. Cheered. And the beacons.
Now,
of course, we've won. New world.
Ben-Gurion was more realistic.
Even then.
Ben-Gurion was a realistic politician.
Mind you, how could they, in other words, who was the Labour government? But Attlee, they couldn't know. Attlee never showed his hand. Never showed his hand. He was anti.
He was anti.
From the beginning. He was against the Balfour Declaration. He was against the Balfour Declaration. No, he didn't say anything.
He didn't speak. There were some who deceived.
All right. He didn't speak. Right. Now,
Bevin,
Morrison was ambivalent. He didn't become an enemy. He didn't become an enemy. Exactly, but he wobbled.
Yes.
But he was not hostile.
No,
I know. But still.
Bevin's domain.
Yes, I know. But he was the chairman of that committee, of cabinet committee, which partitioned.
Yes,
and he was in favor.
Yes.
Against the Foreign Office. Bevin used to appear on Zionist platforms.
Bevin was until a certain moment Zionist.
Exactly.
Spoke openly.
I know. So he betrayed.
Yeah.
He betrayed, all right.
I don't know how far we...
Dalton was pro.
He didn't know about it, and I'll tell you why. His junior minister was Keith Jones.
Who was pro.
Was pro.
Definitely pro. And remain pro. I see.
Tell us, we spoke with him and we thought that it was Bevin's ideas. At the beginning of the war, Bevin was...
Well, maybe they were. Creed Jones remained quite loyal.
Yes, but he was Greek.
Very. Very.
You had Arthur Greenwood was a friend.
Yes.
Noel Decker was a friend.
Exactly. Wait a bit more. Dalton was a friend.
Dalton was a friend.
Almost too much. Yes.
Remember.
So... It was all just Bevin and the Foreign Office.
And
Attlee.
Alexander was the Minister of Defense.
He was against, yes. Yes, because of... Yes. He was anti. Yes. Well, Alexander said he was against. Not clear why, but he was.
Let's not discuss the Labour Party. Now,
Who else were they? Wait a moment.
At the beginning, those are the major figures. I mean, you had their Lord Joyce as the Chancellor.
He was pro.
He was close.
Or neutral.
Yes,
I know. Jimmy Rothschild, etc. You see? Who were they?
And then
against. Against.
Yes, but...
Absolutely against. Like with the Webbs. He was a cousin of Mrs. Webb on pure socialist natives. Hair of the black men.
But he doesn't show in the cabinet meeting.
No, but I'm telling you.
I know.
Those who knew him. Maybe he was careful. He was straight 100% against. Like Sidney Webb. Same reasons.
So, and then you had Nybeff, and who was a friend?
Yes.
Yes,
surprise is natural.
Now, where were you in November the
20th? So it's Crips, Italian and Italy.
And the reformulation of British interest in the Middle East.
Well, of course. Of course, all right.
It's not, after all,
it's not arbitrary. Not just anti-Semitism.
Not at all, in the contrary. Had it been only the problem of Jews and Arabs in Palestine, all of them would have turned on our side. The problems were was Egypt, Iraq. Where were you in November the 29th, when the resolution of the United Nations?
I am 1947. The date is?
November the 29th. The resolution on partition.
On November the 29th, 1947, I was in Oxford. It did not make a tremendous impression on me. I'm astonished to tell you. Nor on you. Of course I knew the preliminaries. I mean, all everything. But I knew what was happening. And I knew that efforts were being made. And I knew there were debates in the United Nations. And I knew who was who. And I went for walks with Bealey on the Hampstead Heath.
In 47.
Just before this.
Yes. When he anticipated that there is no chance for a majority.
Exactly. And he told me that. So, I was involved. It wasn't that I didn't take an interest.
Sure.
You see, and I used to try and persuade him that he might be wrong. He might be wrong.
Really?
He said to me, it's...
He counted. Who do you think?
They all counted. Everybody counted. You see, and Bealey said, and I used to say to him, you know, this may not be so. And I remember Webster used to say to me, then, he lived in the same house with someone near Bealey, I think, in London. He said, well, all these anti-Semites are against, of course. The American anti-Semites always get together with the British anti-Semites, and that's the trouble. That is Webster's verdict. But he was counting, yes. He thought that they were majority against, the mandate would go back to England, and then they would
free hand,
and they would create some kind of...
They had their plans, yes.
A kind of long, pencil-like settlement of Jews in Tel Aviv along the sea or something.
Now, you, I mean, when you speak about the War of Independence, what do you have in mind? The whole period since December 47, I mean, the last 6 months of the mandate in which there was a war between us and the Arabs?
But 48, you're talking about 48.
Or only from May 48 when the state was
declared
and the regular armies...
So what are you asking me?
What is the War of Independence? Sorry.
The War of Independence for me. Wait a moment. When did the siege of Jerusalem begin?
Before,
in that case, nothing to do with the state. Because I wrote a letter. Therefore, the Jews in England, of course, very upset. The assumption was the Arabs might win. Who did not think that? Everybody in England, including the Jews, thought it might happen. I wrote a letter to Emery. He didn't.
He believed that they will gain more territories. That the result of the war will be a much smaller Jewish state.
But still a state. But even before the state was declared. You mean after the resolution?
Not immediately after the resolution, but during the process of the guerrilla war between us and the Arabs and our victory.
In 48.
In 48, he evaluated the situation in a very clear way. That he thought that the Arab armies will do better, but the outcome will be a smaller Jewish state.
Well, what I can tell you is that I wrote the letter to Emery, saying he was a minister, I think. Well, he was not a minister, Labour government. That's quite right. He was influential anyway. I said to him, look, he must in Parliament or whatever. Well, he was the Lord, was he? He was in Parliament. Still in the House of Commons. Yes.
He was not elected.
Never became a Lord.
And he was not elected in Parliament.
So what was he doing?
Why did you write to him?
Why did I write to him? Because I knew him. But why did I write to him? Just because he was an important person, I think. I think. Simply say something must be done to save the Jews in Jerusalem. There must be a massacre. You really must take steps to prevent this. The British must do something. I mean a mandatory administration. When did the attack on Jerusalem begin?
Well,
the siege.
You
can't pinpoint it.
But let's say in late April there was a dangerous situation. But what you described would fit more the situation.
I remember having to go to a meeting of the Anglo-Jewish Association of all things to bring pressure on members of Parliament, etc. This rather non-Zionist body.
It was probably after, maybe.
The worry was very great.
It was the most critical month. Now, where were you when the state was declared? In Oxford too.
This is when? This is...
May the 15th of May.
No. Certainly not. I was at Harvard.
Do you remember the event?
Wait. Was I in Harvard 47 or 48? No. I was in Oxford. Harvard 49.
Do you remember the...
You just asked me. No. Not very much.
No, not November 29th, but the declaration of the state in May the 15th.
I'm telling you, yes. No, I wasn't deeply stirred. I knew it would happen. It was clear to me that something like that would happen. Weitz was against it, I remember. I wasn't sure. Oh, yes, he was.
No.
Deep look. At a certain point, Lane Brera, he became for it. Because Lane Brera.
Ah, yes, all right. But when it came... When
by 47, he was in favor.
But the chips were down at the eve of the decision, which was in a narrow majority. He sent Vice Guard to Ben-Gurion and said, declare war now or never.
The war?
No, the state.
The state.
Now or never.
Oh, no. By 1947, he was in favor. By Bevin. Once the Anglo-Jewish war started, no question. Once the English were not going to behave nicely, that was the end. That was the end.
Now.
Oh, you're quite right about that. Who was not in favor? Chertok was not. Charette.
No,
who voted against?
The major vote was not in the cabinet, in the agency, but in Mapai, in the central.
All right.
Against were the traditional Apoel HaTzair, Kaplan, Remez.
Why?
Because they did not against, but they voted in favor of the American suggestion to postpone it for a month.
Why?
To enable armistice negotiations to materialize. There were initiatives.
Why would it be easier to bring an armistice without the state?
Because it's the Arabs, that was the stipulation of the Arabs. They wouldn't agree to the negotiations on armistice if we had declared the state.
Well, yes, otherwise they might.
Pardon?
Otherwise it's thought the most possible thing. I see.
There was.
I see.
The summer campaign in 56. Now, all your friends were against the British move, of course.
56.
When?
Yes.
The collusion.
Certainly. I can tell you exactly what my position was.
Were you embarrassed?
No. I was rung up on the telephone by my friend Raymond Hoffmannsthal, who says the Jews have marched into Egypt, or are marching to Suez. Marching to Suez. And I said, my God, I'm not sure they should. Great powers can allow themselves these things. Small powers are usually disciplined in such cases. By the next day, and I was entirely in favor. I was not skeptical, though. I wanted them to go forward, and I wanted them to win. And when the American intervention occurred, I was extremely disappointed and very sorry. I thought it was a terrible mistake on the part of Israel, but of course I wanted them to march. And I asked myself, I was in favor of the English too.
Are you ready?
Yes, in favor of collusion.
In favor of collusion.
Pro-Suez. Straightforward pro-Suez. In Oxford, there was a terrible explosion. In St. Antony's, there was a meeting and to protest. So during the march, and the people who were there who protested were the vast majority of dons in Oxford were against. James Joel was beside himself. My friend Tony Andrews, the heart, coal, sort of the worst crime committed by the government. Who is in favor of Suez? David Cecil. Of course. Deakin, certainly. Maurice Barr. Who? No idea. No idea. I have no idea. John Sparrow, of course. I did not sign a pro-Suez letter. And I did not sign an anti-Suez letter. Because I thought in the end, with pro-Suez, I thought it would be a failure. My position is clear. I was pro because if they lost, it would go against Israel. Simply for straight Israeli patriotism. For no other reason. But I didn't see how it could succeed for the following reason. I thought, supposing they won. All right, Nasser is gone. Then what happens? They install Naguib. Then what happens? They can't sit on bayonets. Yet sooner or later, there's bound to be rebellion. The whole idea is to be lunatic.
Now, you then were in quite friendly terms with Harold Macmillan.
No.
In the 50s, no?
Not in 56. Wait a moment. Yes, I was. I didn't see him at all.
So you have you ever discussed with him, Israel?
No, he was entirely pro. Oh, he's what I mean. It came up. He was 100% pro-Israel every time I met him. But he always said, you mustn't give in. You. When he talked to Jews, he assumed they were not English.
Now
you must stand up later in the 70s. Oh, no, don't yield about the Six-Day War. And later Yom Kippur, 100% pro-Israel, no, never anti.
Do you know that
he's talking to me.
Pardon?
He's talking to me.
No, he was,
yes.
He really
was. I'm sure it's true.
Now, in the background to Steinmeier, to the collusion, the idea of bringing the Israelis in
was his. How wonderful.
And the
very clever.
And he knew that he couldn't persuade Eden. So
because he was anti-Semitic, of course.
He went to Churchill, to persuade Churchill, and
persuaded Eden. No, because he hated the Jews. It's very interesting, this, what Gabi tells me. The idea of involving Jews in Suez, Israelis in Suez, was Macmillan's idea.
The idea
yeah.
of bringing us into the collusion. Yes,
because already some
with the French.
I mean, they were discussing it with the French, and he thought, I mean...
No, today it was something different. Today was that he stopped the war too early. It wasn't quite so bad. Because Eden always believed that that's true. They didn't die to get Eden out. That's why Clarissa hates him. But the idea of a combination of French, the idea of combination of Jews and French and English, of course Eden was violently anti-Israel and on the whole anti-Semitic.
But he was consistent in the Suez affair.
Well, once he was persuaded it was necessary, strategic reasons, he didn't want to do it. He did it with the greatest, he held his nose. Held his nose. He did it, but a contre-coeur.
You see, I mean, Ben-Gurion was so loyal to Eden. I mean, Ben-Gurion, when the agreement was signed in Sèvres between the British, the French, and us, Ben-Gurion insisted that there would be an agreement written again. When the two British delegates came back to London, one was, I think, Pearson Dixon, I can't remember who was there, they got the hell from here, that they left the document. So they went back begging the Israelis...
To destroy it. Give it back.
The Nuon didn't, the Nuon kept it, but promised even that never...
He would never reveal it. Never reveal it. Never did, I know. I know. Then go and tell me all this. He told me all this. I know it. But he said to me that Eden was a dreadful man. He did say that. He said, Eden is no good, treacherous, weak. I don't see why. I don't see why I couldn't say what Ben-Gurion said.
Nothing will be published without you.
Of course. Well, Eden was anti-Semitic. I was perfectly aware. I'm saying that. No, of course not. Not that I care.
Nothing.
Not that I care. Clarissa knows it perfectly well. Right.
No, it's not so bad.
No, it's not so bad.
You take it as time you go.
All right. Because, I mean, usually the problem with taxis is on Saturday night.
I'm going to order anyway. Don't miss it.
Yeah, he has time to take you because we have...
All right.
Yeah, thank you.